Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Hello, and welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with, with Christine Franklin, except we're having some struggles with our... with our Skype. I'm not sure what's going on there. But you can hear me, Ethan, right? You got me? Okay, good. Yeah.
Hello?
We'll be getting Chris Franklin on here in a second. Hello, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Mark. How are you?
Good. I'm doing well. We're having technological struggles today. Every once in a while, Skype decides to be weird. And... this is one of those days, but it's all working now, so everything is great.
Okay,
and,
great.
Yeah, good. So you must be so excited about the results of Super Tuesday. It's just, it's got to be a thrill for you. I know.
I can't hear you. Yeah. I can't hum. Yeah.
Come on, you're from the land of Jesse
Happy
Ventura.
Happy birthday to you. Anything can happen
Jesse
if
Ventura.
We pretend. Yes.
It's true.
Man who bragged that he wore no underpants. I mean, I needed to know that, right?
Clap your hands and believe. That's what I say. So,
yeah, but we all
yeah.
got our oh. Jesse. We all got our Jesse check.
Yeah. It's well, you know, it's an important thing to do. But
$400 per household in order to drain the entire state surplus.
Well, it was, you know, it. And things are going to get even better with Trump as our dear leader. It's all going to be fantastic.
Oh, no.
So
oh,
you
no.
just have
Mark,
to
please don't say
clap
it
your
yet.
Hands it's and not... believe. Just clap no. your hands and believe. It's just
I think it's going to be Billary. I do. I'm scared. I'm sorry to say that, but it's
well,
my gut.
Yeah. I think at this point that's entirely possible, but you know, there it is. Well,
yeah.
It's we live in interesting times. That's, you know, it's the
Is
Chinese
that what you
curse.
Call it?
So,
okay.
Yes, these are interesting times. People
are
may
the
well
best
look
times
back.
Or the worst times. Yeah.
As always, you know, we may you know, look back on Super Tuesday as a day in history. A significant day in American history, but
I mean, in all seriousness,
moving on from that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, I keep thinking that I thought for a long time that future generations would look back at my generation and curse it, but you know, you do what you can. So, in the meantime, we could talk about, you know, there's other things to talk about.
There are other things to talk about.
Yes. So, you know, one very Lenten thing to discuss, a very cheering subject to discuss during Lent is death.
Death.
I think that
I love it.
Death is an important thing, especially at Lent, because of course all of Lent is leading, it's going to culminate in a death. That's what the whole thing is about. We Lent is practice for death.
Yes.
And in fact, you could really argue that the whole Christian life is a practice for death. And the Greeks, by the way, got this. The Greeks said that the love of wisdom was the practice of death. That you're preparing yourself for the fact that you're not always going to be around. And that everything is all leading up to your death.
Yeah.
That's how the story
is. Well, you know, it's...
This story is going to end that way.
It's a topic that we don't like to talk about, mostly. Most people don't. You know, you don't get invited to a party and say, so death, you know? But just yesterday... Now, this really happened. Just yesterday, I was at the dentist having... getting ready for a crown. Boy, do I wish it was the real thing, but, you know, not that kind of crown. The crown that goes in your mouth and no one sees, although it costs you a fortune.
You know the dentist's favorite hymn, right?
Crown him with many crowns.
Many
gold
crowns.
So I was in there visiting various molds and things in my mouth. I don't like talk sideways, you know. But I got into a very interesting discussion with the assistant and the dentist about how we want to be our bodies to be disposed of after we die. And that's a topic that's somewhat near and dear to my heart, because I have very strong opinions on it for myself. And also because our friend Marcus Daly is a coffin maker, so I personally know a coffin maker. And that's on top of that, just recently, the Franklin family has been going through a, do we want to pay to upkeep our spaces in the family plot in Boulder, Colorado? And it's exorbitant. And so we had to make a decision. And Marty and I, of course, decided, you know, whoever goes first, the other person decide where to bury them. You know, we're not going to decide now that we in Minnesota, if we die tomorrow, are going to get our bodies shipped to be in the family plot. And it was, you know, like, well, you can have two cremations in one space or one burial in one cremation. But if you want two burials side by side, you're going to have to pay blah. And it was just like, whoa, the funeral business, it is big bucks. But it's better to think about it now and make some decisions now. And so it's something I've been thinking about and our family has been talking about in a cheerful way. And always ending with, dear, please don't die soon. But, you know, sort of like, well, what do you want? And how do you want to be buried? And what do you want to, let's talk about this thing. So kind of got me going.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that our pal Marcus Daly, we should have Marcus on the show sometime.
I love Marcus.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's been, www.mariancaskets.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. www.mariancaskets.com. If you're planning a funeral anytime soon, by all means, give him a call. He's a coffin maker, and he has thought rather deeply about the whole issue of death. It is, after all, what this life is a preparation for. And, of course, followed by, at some point or another, followed by resurrection. Catholics, one of the things that N.T. Wright has pointed out, which I thought was astute, he says, Christians don't believe in life after death, he said. Christians believe in life after death, because we believe in the resurrection. You know, anybody can believe in life after death. That's not hard. The apostles believed in life after death before they saw the resurrection. That's why they thought Jesus was a ghost, because that was what they were expecting.
Yeah, the spirit lives on, and it's the spirit.
So if you run into somebody after death, you know, well, it's maybe it's got to be a ghost, right?
Right.
Well, here, give me some fish to eat. Well, ghosts don't do that. And so the Christian life is a preparation for death and resurrection. That's what Lent is about. That is supremely, of course, what Easter is going to be about. It's what every Mass in the world is always about. We're encountering the risen Christ, the glorified Christ. And so that's what we should be thinking about during Lent. That's not a weird, morbid thing to think about. That's the whole point. Jesus spends a fair amount of time talking about his imminent death.
Yeah, and you know, many saints, and it's not a bad idea, woke up in the morning and with their morning prayers prayed, and if I die today, let me die in your grace. And then they ended their day with, and thank you, Lord, for this day. And if I die tonight, you know, may I die in your grace. And I thought that isn't morbid. That's just reality. And to live in reality is to live the Catholic life.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, I remember hearing, I think I've mentioned this story before. Garrison Keillor one time talked about, he was at a funeral. And at the end of the funeral, whoever was officiating at the funeral said, may God be merciful to the next person in this room who is to die. Because, you know, one of those people in the room is the next person to die.
Somebody's next. Yeah.
Somebody's next. You know, maybe in me. in this conversation that we're having, one of the two of us is going to die. We might, by some fluke, be on the same airplane when we die together, but the chances are one of us is going to die first. And everybody was offended by this at this funeral. They thought that was just such a horrible thing to do. And Garrison Keillor was like, I thought that was great.
Yeah.
You know, because it's absolutely true.
At all. Yeah. Well, one of the things that maybe we shouldn't start this before the break, but I'm very interested in green burial. And there was an interesting discussion today on whether that was, quote, new age or not. And I think we should discuss what is Catholic burial, or what does the Catholic Church teach about what can be done with our remains after we're gone. I think that's really important because there are a lot of misunderstandings, and some things have changed since the new Code of Canon Law in 1983, and it's just good to be informed. You love facts. Our listeners love facts, or they wouldn't be listening to us, right, Mark?
That's right. So we will be back right after this with Christine Franklin. I'm your host, Mark Shea. You're listening to Connecting the Dots here on Breadbox Media. Back in a minute.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
And welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Christine Franklin, talking about things Lenten, and we're talking about the old saying, memento mori, remember, you're going to die. Here's Dateline, Concrete, Washington. This is from today. These things are common stories in one place in the world, the United States of America. Man taking selfies with gun fatally.
Oops.
He was a responsible gun owner, you see. And so he was, and I'm willing to bet, I don't know, I've read the story, I don't know that anybody's analyzed it this granularly, but you know what? People who are uncoordinated, you go to do something with your one hand, like push
anything.
The button on the camera.
Yeah.
Push the button on the camera while you're posing with your big steel
loaded
phallus
gun. Yeah.
And he used his other hand, and I'm willing to bet that that's what happened. The gun went off and he killed himself.
Yeah.
Showing off his manhood.
You know, every time I buy Sudafed, you know, and I have to go to the counter at the Walgreens, I have to give him my driver's license like I'm some kind of criminal because I have a head cold. I think, well, what would be so bad about having to buy bullets this way? I can't buy Sudafed without giving them my ID. How about the same thing at the gun store? At decent people, no problem. Here's my ID. Thank you for the bullets. Much little bit of control over the purchase of ammunition, would that ruin America? Some people think
massive liability insurance would also be a good thing, just like when you buy a car.
Yeah, there you go.
But that guy needed that gun because it was going to keep him safe, you see.
Darwin Award.
That was why it was important to have that gun, was because he needed to keep himself safe from Obama, who's going to come and confiscate all the guns day now. He's been in office for 8 years and he hasn't done it yet.
But we're joking about it. I'm taking back the jokes because that's somebody's kid. You know, that's somebody's brother. That's somebody's dad or nephew. It's a friend. It's a human being.
It's a huge tragedy.
Yeah.
It's a huge tragedy.
It's just unthinkable.
And it's a tragedy that happens every day in the United States because we're crazy and we have We have insane laws that allow irresponsible people like this to imagine that they're part of a well-ordered militia. When they're busy blowing their own heads off, or blowing the heads off of their children, or their children blowing their heads off.
You know the character of Dwight Schrute in The Office? I mean, I wonder how many guys out there sort of really secretly see themselves that way. You know, like, I'm this machine. I'm this martial machine, you know, and I got my gun.
Yeah.
It's a, I'm that very was, sad that happened.
That's a discussion for another day. We have to have a consistent pro-life ethic in this country, and we don't. And one symptom of it is exactly things like this. We have a human sacrifice, multiple human sacrifices to that cult of adoration of the gun in the United States, and we have it every day. You know, by the end of this year, you can absolutely guarantee, this is not even a guess, this is a statistical guarantee, that by the end of the year, there will be 33,000 people dead who should not be dead because of gun violence, whether suicide, you know, about two-thirds of that is going to be suicides. And another third of it is going to be people getting shot by other people.
Yeah.
So
death is all around us. But
death is all around us.
Memento mori is, yes, look at the death all around us and remember, mine's a coming.
Right. And it may be here before the end of this sentence. You know, you just, you don't know. There was some guy, what was it, some guy in India? He's like the only person in history to be killed by a meteor. Just, you know, minding his own business, walking down the street, and all of a sudden a rock that came at him from infinity. It's been, you know, in space forever.
Wow.
Just pegged him, and he was dead from a meteor of all things. You know, what a weird way to go. But, you know, it's whether it's going to be a meteor or just, you know, I've had a couple of melanomas removed. Well, who knows? You know, maybe I'm going to get cancer somehow and die, or some other. There's all kinds of ways for me to get killed. or just to die of old age, but it's going to happen. And that's what Lent is pointing us to. Mm-hmm. And you were mentioning before the break that one of the things that is under discussion in some areas is there are all kinds of, you know, there are huge spiritual implications that go with death, and we think about that a lot. But mm-hmm. there's also just kind of a lot of nuts and bolts things mm-hmm. that happen. You know, C.S. Lewis remarks that, you know, in real life, you know, in a play, when Hamlet dies, then you get this dramatic exit omnes, you know, and everybody files out in stately procession with the body, and someone gives a speech, an iambic pentameter. But really what happens when you die is there's like tons of paperwork that you have to do, and you have to figure out how you're going to, you know, where do we bury Grandpa? And what's this going to cost, and how are we ever going to afford this, and all those kinds of things that, you know, the last thing you want to be thinking about at the moment that you've just had some huge tragedy in your family because
So it's a good thing to have talked about it ahead of time, and even if you aren't old like we are, but that you've talked about it with your spouse or your family, because I think that we have a lot of choices as Catholics that are thought worthy, ponderable, and one of those is the idea of a green burial. A green burial, very simply put, is just a minimal burial. So a wood coffin that will rot. Clothing that will rot, and a body that will rot. It hasn't been drained of all its bodily fluid and pumped full of formaldehyde, made up, and all the gold teeth hammered out, as my dentist told me yesterday. They just hammer them out and put in dentures. And I feel my opinion as a Catholic is that I can choose not to have any of that done to my body after I die. And I want to be simply washed, dressed, put in a coffin, and put in the ground. No vault, no chemicals, no junk.
Right.
Well, there's this place in Italy that has created biodegradable. They're basically paper made out of recycled paper, biodegradable burial pods. And you were buried in the crouched position, which is a very ancient, and there's nothing wrong with the position you're buried in. And then the pod is buried and the person is put in, I think, probably naked or with minimal clothing. Like the pod is buried and then a tree is planted that is nourished by the decaying human being. And somebody put this up as a, hey, what do you think about this? Actually, it was Simca, I think. She put this up. Okay. And the first thing somebody said was, oh, this is new agey. Why don't we just go worship the trees? And I thought, wait a minute.
Why is that new agey?
I don't know. Because of the tree. It was the tree that got her. And another video I saw this week on Green Burial was that they are making forest preserves where you can come in, the family digs the hole, the family prepares the body in either a basket, a wooden coffin with no metal parts, like a Jewish, Orthodox Jewish coffin, or they just wrap the body in cloth. The family lovingly digs the hole. The family lovingly places the deceased one in the hole and covers it in flowers or fir boughs or whatever. And then the family together buries the deceased one, rakes up the leaves and everything around him and leaves a very small headstone. And then it's still an environment, a natural environment where animals are going to be and things are going to grow. And it's a preserve. And it's also a funerary preserve.
Yeah.
And I thought, I love that. And so I looked up, what can you do with, people say, well, I want my ashes, scattered in my favorite golf course. And the Catholic Church is very specific. It's sort of non-specific. Buried or cremation, either way, is fine in consecrated ground or in consecrated ground and underground or in a crypt. Those are the only two. And in a suitable, if you have cremation, cremains, they have to be in a suitably dignified vessel. And then placed in the ground or into, a mortuary crypt. And I thought, that leaves a lot of room, and I just like the idea of nobody mishandling my body after it's dead. Like it's just a piece of dead meat to fix up for show.
Right.
So I actually looked into the laws of Minnesota. They can hold you on ice for 6 days. That's not bad. And then in the state of Minnesota, which I found fascinating, if you have land, you can petition the county to make a family burial plot. And you can, and it actually becomes tax-free land if it's a family burial plot and you can get permission to be buried on your own land. As a family, I thought, now, and then if you were Catholic, you would have to ask the priest to consecrate the land for the graves.
Right.
But,
right.
I just thought that is really cool to start thinking of the different ways we could go and what does it cost the family, and just cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we will continue this discussion when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here with Christine Franklin, and we will be back right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
And welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here with Christine Franklin. And we've been talking a little bit about death because it's part of what we think about during Lent. And it's a healthy thing to reflect on the fact that it turns out that you are not everlasting in this world. And sooner or later, you sort of think to yourself, well, All the world was all of history has been leading up to me. We tend to live this way. All of history was pretty much leading up to me. And now that I'm here, we have reached the final and permanent platform from which to judge all previous ages. And then the great rebuke comes when... I was thinking about this the other day. In a certain sense, every death is a suicide. If suicide means using your own body to kill you, well, ultimately, every death is kind of a suicide, because even natural death is, it's your own body just turning against you and then finally saying, that's it, I quit.
The end.
And you're done, you know? Okay. And obviously, that's facetious, but it is the case that not only was history not just leading up to you, or not leading up to you at all, but you know, there's going to come a day when history is going to go marching on without you, and
yeah.
And for the vast majority of us, of course, who are not Napoleon or Alexander the Great or some other figure, you know, for every Alexander who died, who we remember, millions and millions and millions of us are going to just disappear without a trace. We will be mourned for the lifetime of our children. We'll be occasionally thought of now and then, hopefully with fondness, by our grandchildren. And that's it.
100 years from now, we will be bones.
Yeah. And, you know, people will pass. They might, if you happen to be lucky enough to have a gravestone, you know, they might pass by your gravestone and say, I wonder who that guy was. Is that pronounced Shia? Shia? Shia?
I don't know. Was he a Muslim?
Was he a Muslim? You know? And then they'll pass on. They might take a picture of it because of the way the moss was growing on the stone and had almost eaten off all the letters on the stone, so you could barely read it. And that will be it for you. And so you will be remembered, as they say in the funeral liturgy, you know, you'll be remembered by God. And that's really what matters, of course, is being if you're remembered by God, then you're really, really remembered, because God doesn't forget things except for your sins. When you confess them and repent them, he forgets all about them. But that is how we live and move and have our being, is we're remembered in God. And so when we're talking about death, and we're talking about the liturgy, which is, after all, in memoriam, there's a couple of things that I think are important to notice in the Catholic approach to death. First of all, the Catholic approach to death insists that life is changed, not ended. That, as Cardinal Newman once put it, all who have lived live still. And so when you die, your earthly existence has ended, but that doesn't mean that you have been blotted out. We are not, our lives are not like candle flames, where when you, once you pinch the wick, they're just gone. There's nothing more. That's not our faith as Catholics. The insistence of the faith as Catholics is that we continue on. We continue on in a certain sense maimed by death, because we're not supposed to be a separation of body, soul, and spirit. That's not normal for us.
That's why it's always shocking, no matter, even when we're ready for it. My mom died of cancer. She was sick for 2 years. She was on her deathbed for days. And when she finally died, it's like, what? She's dead? Why are we so shocked? Because it's not natural.
It's not natural for us. No. It's normal, but it's not natural for us.
It's not natural.
And so this is what C.S. Lewis once remarked, that almost the whole of Christian theology could be deduced from the fact that we laugh at dirty jokes and we find the dead to be uncanny. which I thought was very perceptive of him. And he said both of those things indicate something wrong in the relationship between body and spirit. So he says dogs don't seem to find anything funny about their sexuality. They just do their business as dogs because there is no disjunction between body and soul for a dog. Dogs just have doggy souls doing what doggies do. But we find we keep finding that there's something weird about the fact that we live in bodies that require sex in order to reproduce. And the fact that we find something odd about the fact of the relationship between soul and body is, he says, indicative. But he says we also find the dead to be uncanny. And why is that? Why are we afraid of the dead? I mean, the dead are the least likely to be able to hurt us. You know, dead people aren't dangerous to us. So what is it about the dead that we find to be uncanny? Well, he says it's the separation of body and soul. That's not supposed to happen.
Right.
And whenever it happens to a human being, we always look at it and say, that's wrong. That's mm-hmm. Some kind of unnatural violence has been done to this organism. Well, yeah, the church says that's called the fall. That's what happened, was the spirit, if you will, lost control of the body when it rebelled against God. And so the body sort of lives out that rebellion, and eventually the body sooner or later kills you because it's not, it keeps breaking down.
Well, and I think that that's a, you know, the fact of, you know, it's the inevitability, the fact that it's going to happen. We all know it. We sort of fear it. But that's why a really great funeral, a really great Catholic funeral is a place of conversion. And the funeral is for the living.
Yeah.
And so that's why there are rules about the funeral and how we dispose of, I don't like that word, how we say goodbye to the remains of somebody, the earthly remains of somebody that we love, is really important, and why the church makes rules about it. Because right. That funeral, that mass, that burial is a witness. It says something. The actions, yeah. The actions that we do say something about what we believe. And I had a very, very dear friend who was dying of cancer, and she planned her funeral down to the lunch.
Mm-hmm.
She planned the music and who would sing it and what priest would give the homily. And it was a beautiful funeral and a beautiful testimony, not a stand up and let's talk about how great this person was in life, a beautiful testimony to our belief as Catholics in the, yeah. in the next life, in life with Christ. And, yeah. I think that people don't understand that. They say, well, you know, but Dad wanted us to scatter his ashes on the golf course, you know? And so why does the church say no can do?
Yeah. Well, because when we look at historically, there are a couple of things going on. Of course, the main thing is that the body remains sacred even when it's dead. And this is yep. foreign to us. We
yeah,
tend to think
is.
Of the body as it's the Tupperware container for the soul, you know?
Yeah, and I think that comes from Protestantism. I do. Just the idea that the spirit lives on, but the body's just the junk that... Once the soul is gone, it's junk. That's how I was taught about when I was a kid about death.
Yeah, there is that. There's that kind of body-spirit duality.
Yeah,
And so you get this notion, you know, that, as one guy I know said, a very devout evangelical, but he described the body as a finely tuned bag of genetic chemicals. This is not our faith as Catholics.
No,
you know, why?
Not.
Well, because of the resurrection. The resurrection hallows the body. It was an intuition that we already had. That's why there were funerals before Christ. And, you know, I talked about this one time with my Tuesday host, Tom McDonald, that something happened in Samarkand. I think Samarkand is in Iraq, in around 30,000 years ago that had never happened before in the entire history of planet Earth, which was one creature buried it's dead.
Yeah.
For the very first time in the history of the world.
We find that in Britain, even among the Neanderthals.
Right.
They buried their dead.
They buried their dead, and they recognized that there was something significant about the body that you didn't just do, as all creatures had done, you know, millions and millions of species on planet Earth.
You just eat it up, right?
4.5 billion years. They just died, and you just walked off and left them. We'll be back after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we'll be back with Chris Franklin after this.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Chrissy Franklin and I almost said Simca Fisher because I had her on my mind because we were talking about Simca during the break.
I'm a lot taller than her.
A lot taller than Simca. A lot blonder.
Blonder.
Yeah. She's not going to get melanoma like us.
She sure isn't. None of her kids are either.
That's right. So, but anyway, before we went to the break, you know, we were talking about the fact that human beings have intuited since the dawn of the race that there was something sacred about the dead body. It's not necessarily a guaranteed slam dunk because we know so little about antiquity. What we find, for example, first is, you'll find tombs being built, but they're being built for the great. So, mm-hmm. The reason there are pyramids is because the king is a god king. And so we have to prepare for his death. We're not super clear on what views of, the death of peasants were.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do find is that, before there are kings, you still find people being, burying their dead.
Various ways. Yeah.
The reason that we know so much about Egypt is exactly that Egypt was an entire civilization that was wholly ordered toward death. It was all the art that we have from Egypt, it's all grave goods. It's all stuff that was decorating a tomb.
And it's all dry there, so it's safe.
And it's dry. Yeah, so it's safe. Yeah. And so so much of what we know about antiquity is because people did prepare for death and people buried their dead. And so this is an intuition that's already very present in the human race long before the coming of Christ. And it's something that develops in Judaism. Judaism doesn't seem to have had initially much of an idea of the afterlife, which is interesting itself because, of course, Israel has this long experience of contact with Egyptian culture that's obsessed with death. And when it leaves Egypt, it just kind of just chucks everything, it would appear.
Except they saved Joseph's body, or Jake.
Right.
Yeah, right. They prepared it properly.
They honored the body.
They honored bodies, yeah.
But the idea was, the Jewish idea actually of Sheol was just, it was just sort of this shadowy realm. Sort of like the Greek idea of Hades, that there was just kind of this shadowy realm where the dead are sort of witless spirits, wandering around. So there was no idea of heaven in early Israelite religion. And eventually, we don't really know how, Israel picks up the idea. You see it in full flower, for example, in the books of the Maccabees, picks up the idea of the resurrection. We see references to it in the prophets as well.
And then we see fights in the New Testament because some believed in the resurrection and some Sadducees did not.
Right, right. That's why they were sad.
They were Jewish people. They were sad, you see, because they did not believe in the resurrection. So even at the time of Christ, there were, quote, theologians arguing about what happens after we die.
Right. Two Jews, three opinions. The classic, you know, situation, right? So you've got Pharisees who actually believe things that were fairly similar to what Jesus teaches. And then there are Sadducees who don't buy any of that. That's why they have that argument with Jesus about, you know, the guy has the woman marries a guy and he dies. And so she marries his brother and on and on.
He dies.
Resurrection, whose wife is she going to be? And the whole point of that question is, what a maroon. You believe in the resurrection.
Yeah.
And Jesus' argument with them appeals to the Torah, not to the prophets, because the Sadducees didn't buy that the prophets were inspired scripture. They only trusted Torah. So he argues with them from Torah and says, well, you know, God is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God is the God of the living.
God
and
of
not
the living,
dead.
Right.
And so this is where you see, you know, the Christian tradition, of course, is building on this. Jesus is speaking about this. But, of course, the great capstone of the Christian tradition on all that's come before is the resurrection of Jesus. And so because of this, Jesus really drives home how hallowed the body is. Because the body, the dead body, is the seed of the resurrection. And so we honor the dead body.
And so from the beginning, Christians honored the dead body differently than the surrounding culture as a statement.
Right. Yeah. That's why relics, for example.
And catacombs.
Catacombs. Yeah. You honored the body of the dead because it was the seed of the resurrection. And so you kept relics of the saints because they were tokens of that. And this would greatly influence Catholic and Christian funereal practices. You're right. There's a change that comes with the dawn of Protestantism. So I was in Boston a few years ago. We went on something called the Freedom Trail Walk. You start at Boston Common.
Been there.
Have you done that? Okay.
Yeah, so sure.
We walked past the graveyard where Paul Revere is buried.
Yeah.
And it's right in the middle of Boston. This is bustling, you know, urban traffic everywhere and skyscrapers and everything. And here's this little graveyard. And it says, you know, Paul Revere is buried in here somewhere. And the point of it was that the way the Puritans handled their funereal practices, because they didn't place any importance on the body, was, you know, you dug the first grave, you threw in the dead, you dug the second grave, you made a nice neat row, you started the second row and kept filling up that patch of ground until you got to the back, you know, the back row and finished the last grave. And by that time, grave number one, whoever the occupant was, had gone back to the soil. So you just dug that grave up and you threw in the next occupant. And you just, so every grave had like three or four occupants in it. Before they built another graveyard. And so somewhere in that graveyard, Paul Revere is sharing his final resting place with three other guys. And that's a very different approach to death than the Catholic approach to death.
The other thing is that, you know, the beginning of Christianity, the Romans burnt bodies on pyres.
Right.
And Christians found that repugnant because it seemed to be in defiance of the idea that there was that the Christ would raise us from the dead.
Well, and sometimes it
bodily.
Was.
It was. And that's why for such a long time, the church did not allow cremation of Christians.
Right.
And now the church, it wasn't an item of dogma. So it was something that the church could ponder for a long, long time and change the rule so that now cremation is allowed, but it is, the cremated remains must be buried in a suitable vessel, all in one piece, in the ground.
Yeah.
And I think
the idea is to honor the dead.
The idea is honored that body.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the remains of the body, whether they're in a pod or a coffin or just wrapped in granny's quilt or in a pretty urn, to honor the body and also not forget to pray for the dead.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
The last of the spiritual works of mercy is prayer for the living and the dead. And this is one of the things that I love best about the Catholic tradition is that
it is
so promiscuous with its prayers. We, you know, I once remarked in a book that I wrote that, you know, pagans prayed to the unknown God and Catholics pray for the unknown sinner. And so you get those prayers that are, you know, like after you've prayed all the normal prayers that you pray, then you get to prayers for all those most in need of thy mercy. So, you know, Hitler, you know, Osama bin Laden, all these people you would never think to pray for.
I love that.
Yeah. And for those who have no one to pray for them, what a beautiful thing to say, you know, because you know that there are people out there that have nobody in their whole life praying for them. And when you make that prayer, you're making a conscious effort, you know, to pray for every struggling soul in the world, including those who are dead.
I do that. Sometimes I offer a rosary for all those who have nobody to pray for them.
What a wonderful thing to
do. I think that we should all do that. I'm not patting myself on the back. It's something I learned to do when I became Catholic.
Well, yeah, it was a church.
A cool thing, you know, it's a church. It's a cool thing. It's like, I can make a difference. And God knows who those people are. And so I offer my prayer for them. And we can all do that. Why not?
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to be able to do. And that's, you know, that also goes, that's a very fundamental difference between the Catholic Church and many species of Protestantism. There are some places in Protestantism that say there is, not only do we not pray for the dead, but you shouldn't pray for the dead. There's no point in it. It's a waste of time.
They call it necromancy.
It's like, why have a funeral at all if there's no point in praying for the dead? And so I've always thought that this was kind of an obvious thing. And you see examples of prayer for the dead in Scripture. Oh, and we're out.
Pray for the dead.
For the dead. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here with Christine Franklin today, and we will be back with Steve Gardonis tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening in. Our producer today was Ethan Bolin, and you've been listening to Breadbox Media. Bye-bye.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.